Today's test show will be on case 19 in the Hachikan Roku, in the Blue Rock Collection. Gute's One Finger Zen. Engo's introduction. When even one particle stirs, the whole universe is involved. A blossom opens, and the whole world responds. But what do you see when no particle stirs and a blossom does not open? It is said that it is like cutting the thread on a reel. One cut and you cut the whole thing. Or it is like dyeing the thread of a reel. Dye it once and you dye it all. Now if you eradicate all the complications that affect you, and bring out the treasure within you, you will find that everything is all right above and below, before and behind. If you have not done so, then see the following. Main subject. Gute, whenever he was asked a question, only raised a finger. Secho's verse. Well now, I like Gute's way of answering. Who could compare with him throughout the whole universe? He let down the wooden float into the dark sea, making the blind turtle sink and swim and cling to it. This is the final day of our winter 2006 session, and I would say it's been so far a very successful session. We still have a number of hours left, and anything can happen. So please keep sitting with diligence. But it's been most impressive. I've been so happy with everybody's presentation in the Dokusan room. And everybody's been sitting beautifully. This morning, again, the Zendo was silent. And people were immovable. It was just wonderful, really wonderful. And of course, I think the atmosphere has been deepened by the change in the weather. You know, that last night was just so wonderful, I thought. Just those winds were amazing. You might not know this if you haven't been here in August. But actually, in August, there are very strong winds here as well. They come off the ocean and they blow all day sometimes. We've had August where we've been sitting in the Zendo and not only have we had thunderstorms with the crashing thunder, but very strong winds again. It's just beautiful to sit. It's exciting. I mean, you have to admit, you know, it's exciting. And especially after 5 days of sitting, when you experience everything so crisply and intensely, you know. I mean, a few days ago it was 61 degrees. Today it's about 29 degrees. It's quite a drop. And let's face it, when you, you know, when it was 61, it was like summer out here. And you could, you have to go to the, I say, and now we'll have a bathroom break. And everybody gets up, and we trot out, and we walk into the dorm, and we use the bathroom. And we walk back, and I think, oh, well, you know, now what? Now, just getting to the bathroom, it's like an adventure. it's an adventure. You open that door, oh my God, look at that, you know. The wind is howling, you know. It's so cool, right? It's cool. It's exciting. And you walk in, you know, I almost went down on the ice, and I stepped through the door and I was going forward and the wind blew the door and it closed on my robe. So I started moving forward and it jerked me back. It was like, what? You know, it was great. I mean, it was an adventure, right? Wonderful. Wonderful. And this, you know, I must confess, you know, whether it's 60 or whether it's 20, wonderful, but this, you know, has to feel, this is the real winter session weather today, so it's wonderful to end in this way, I think. One way to reflect on what has been happening here is that all week, you know, the weather has been working on its koan. You know. Yes, right? It's been stuck in summer, or it's been stuck in, you know, early fall, and it hasn't been able to become winter. And all week it's been struggling to answer its koan, and this morning, bing, you know, it's answered its koan. Now, you know, that seems ridiculous, you know, on the face of it. It's like a clever metaphor. But it's not so crazy, actually, because we make a big distinction between natural processes, like a changing of weather, and ourselves, which we think of somehow as separate from all these complicated processes. But that distinction is really very arbitrary. You know, the mind is also a complex system, like the weather. And it has the same dynamics that are not so different from changing the weather. Really, the more you do this, the more obvious this becomes, that the two are not so different. So it's not so crazy to say that the weather has been trying to answer its koan all week. The difference between us and the weather is that we sit here and worry about it. Right? You know? We're complex systems, but we don't know it ordinarily. And so it would be as though you were December 10th, I mean, pardon me, you were January the 10th, and you're thinking, my God, I'm supposed to be winter, but it's 60 degrees. This is not right. And all week, the weather's been worrying and worrying and upset, and I'm never gonna get to winter. I'm never gonna be winter. You know, I'll never amount to anything. I knew it would turn out. Or, damn it, you know, this is a fraud. This whole thing is a fraud. These seasons, they're just a fraud. You know, there's no such thing. What is winter? What is summer anyway? straining, and then boom, this natural change, natural transformation. And actually, you don't really, there isn't really an answer to your koan. What the answer, so-called, is just like the changing that we've seen from the warm weather we've had to this classical winter day, right? That's really what happens with Sesshin. Is like a transformation. It starts in Sesshin, process of transformation. Working with your koan starts a process of transformation that triggers all of these effects, and gradually there's like a system change. And it's very much like that. You know? So the difference between us and the weather is that we worry, and basically weather just naturally builds and builds and builds and builds, and then they reach a critical point and there's a system-wide change. And that's just what happens on the cushion. It's just like that. So not so silly. Today's Teisho is about a great Zen master named Gute, and whenever he was asked a question, he would just hold up one finger. So if you came in to see Gute in Dokusan and you said, my legs hurt, you know, what should I do? He just put up the finger. Right? Yeah. I assume it was index finger. Ha 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 you come in and you say, I can't control my mouth. I can't do it. I held up the finger. That was his Zen. And he had many deeply awakened students. He produced many deeply awakened students just with that. That's it. That was his one way of teaching, no matter what the question, he just held up his finger. Now, in the Mumonkan, there's a version of this story which is more complicated, and I've talked about it before also. And in that version, Gute has a junior monk who wants to be a great Zen master. And he sees Gute responding to every question with a raised finger. And so basically he thinks, well, you know, I could do that. You know, that's not so tough. So he starts going around, and when other monks ask him a question, he lifts the finger. So Gute hears about this, and he says, you know, that junior monk is imitating you. When people ask him a question, he lifts his finger. And so Gute says, well, please send him to me in Dokusan. So this gets kind of grisly, this part of the story. Basically, what happens is, he says, tell me, what's the sound of one hand clapping? Or he gives him a coin, and the student sticks up the finger. So Gute has a knife in his robe, and he cuts the finger off, see? And the kid screams, as you might expect. Gute asks him another question. He lifts the finger, but the finger is gone, and he has daikensho. Okay, so that's the version in the Mumonkan, basically. This is a much simpler story, and it's emphasizing one part of that more complicated koan. And this is really the subject of today's talk. People discover all kinds of things in the 5 days of the session. They discover, among other things, sometimes anyway, much about themselves, about the person they call themselves. And it's not always what we expected. So we come to Sesshin, and we may be surprised to see anger or fear or other characteristics that we didn't recognize in ourselves before. And this is actually quite a wonderful aspect of the Sesshin process, that when we come to Sesshin, we can begin to work through these habits. And we all bring mental habits, destructive mental habits, with us to Sesshin, or we wouldn't be here. And often we don't really come to terms with having them. Most people try to envision themselves as, not exactly Mother Teresa or the Dalai Lama, but a decent person, right? And we know we have our flaws, but we're sure they're pretty minor. Right? And that's actually true for most people. And it's actually true. It's very important not to exaggerate our flaws, because they're not huge. They're just human flaws. But when we sit on the cushion, we want to come here and encounter enlightenment, or at least to have a breakthrough. And often what happens to us as we're sitting is that we begin to encounter our negativity. We begin to get pissed off. Or we begin to crumble. We begin to feel like, oh my God, I'll never do this. I knew I was. And we have a host of other emotions too, competitiveness, for example. We have a number of people in our group who are married couples, and I've always been happy to see how they negotiate their Zen practice. When I was in Seattle, we had a married couple, John Godfrey and his wife Cheryl, and John is now the abbot of the Vancouver Zen Center, as a matter of fact. And he studied with Genki Roshi for a number of years, and then went to study with a man named Joshu Sasaki Roshi, and now is the abbot of a Zen center in Vancouver. But John was always a very kind person, and Cheryl was very nice also. But they were both had sort of like a competitive streak, you know. And so I could, you know, when Cheryl would answer her koan and John wouldn't, I could see that it bothered him, you know. Of course, you're not supposed to talk about it, but, they live with each other and they must have, you know, said, well, I passed my koan. And, I would be talking with John. We sat together a lot. And I could see, he said, well, of course it, he was from New Zealand, so he said, oh, of course it doesn't bother me. But he did. I mean, he wouldn't even have said it if it did, you know. I'm happy for her, you know. he had many sort of down under sayings. He didn't say right on, he said spot on. That's spot on. Spot on. He was a wonderful guy, but I could see it bothered him that his wife was, sort of doing better than he was, you know, and she too was very competitive. So, you know, these are characteristics of ourselves. If we're a sort of alpha personality type, you know, we'd like to go into the class and be the one the teacher notices all the time. You know, I myself wasn't very good at anything else except being a student, you know. So I really tried to be a good student. And, if I had the answer, I sure didn't hide it. You know, I'd stick my hand right up there and, you know, yes, and blah, blah, blah. I'd say, oh, very good, very good, you know. And I felt like $1 million, you know. We all, there's a certain kind of personality type that very much wants that kind of approval, and this too is kind, it is tied in with sort of neurotic tendencies and so on. So, you know, when we come to Sesshin, we might imagine like smooth sailing. I'm going to go, I'm going to throw myself into my practice, and I'm going to have a Daikensho, right? Or at least I'm going to answer my koan. And then as soon as we start running, it's like in one of those dreams. Do you ever have one of those dreams where you have to run but you can't run? It's like your legs won't run or something. Again, if you're in the psychoanalytic profession, it probably tells you something about me. But all my life I've had recurring dreams of, you know, sometimes you try to run and you can't run, your legs won't. Sesshin can become like that, right? You come to Sesshin and it just doesn't work, and you feel stuck. A lot of the time what you encounter then are these characteristics, these karmic characteristics that you've developed throughout your life. And we all have them, and they get in our way in every person's case to some degree. And a Zen practice is really about working through them so that the fundamental nature of things will be obvious to us. But a lot of Zen practice is facing these obstacles and working through them. And good news is that it can happen, that this is quite possible. So you sit on the cushion and you're working with your koan and you don't feel like you're getting anywhere, and that's day one. And then day two, you're tired, and you're sitting on your cushion. And then on day three, you might feel, you know, pissed off. Or you just feel down. You know, you feel hopeless. You feel, This might not have happened to you. If it didn't, that's wonderful. But sooner or later, it's going to happen to you, or it's happened to you. And this is, you should have no illusions about the fact that this is your karma. You know, and actually, sort of being in pain is also kind of karma. You know, being constantly in pain and, you know, being brought down by your physical discomfort and just feeling like you're getting a beating at every sit. You know, that's also karma, believe it or not. You know, this is one of the things that happens at Sesshin, is we confront these situations. Now, please don't equate karma with, like, sin, okay? It's not quite the same thing. Because the concept, the Western concept of sin, implies that we have done something knowingly that was morally reprehensible, really bad, you know. And that's not how reality actually is, in my opinion. You know, we develop karmic habits not out of being bad people, because humans are basically not bad. They're basically not. No matter how evil they get, apparently, they're not. We develop negative or destructive mental habits as we go through life because we don't have all the information. Okay? So the problem is not sinfulness, the problem is ignorance. Let me give you an example of what I mean. This is so important to understand this dynamic if you want to understand Zen practice. I've talked about the fact, yesterday as a matter of fact, I was talking about my experience growing up in the beautiful city of Baltimore, Maryland. And I lived in a neighborhood that wasn't really known for being a tough neighborhood, and I'm so glad, because I wouldn't have wanted to live in one of the tough neighborhoods. Because when I would leave my house, our apartment, in the morning and go to school, and when I was in school, I was always in danger of getting beaten up. I would get beaten up on my way to school by bullies. I could get beaten up in school on the playground if I didn't keep my eyes open. And I could get beaten up on the way home. Yeah. And I didn't have a choice. You know, it might be on the way, it might be. I know other people who have grown up in these situations. I have a friend of mine, who grew up in Newark, New Jersey. And he said he was actually used to be afraid to go into the bathroom at his high school. So there are such places. At any rate, I learned that I was never going to be like a good fighter. You know, I was never going to be a tough guy. So I realized that I had to sidestep problems. I had to either talk my way out of things, by being very amiable and, try to distract people long enough to get away. Or I realized that I just had to keep a vigilant eye, and when it looked like a situation was going to lead potentially to violence, to get out of there. You know? So I didn't choose to become like this. I just did in response to events as I was living through them. So as I was going through my life in Baltimore, I became very good at avoiding conflict and avoiding trouble and sort of running away from possible confrontations. And it helped me enormously because I did, you know, have all my teeth, you know, things like that. But the thing is, you know, as I get to be an adult, I just do the same thing in all kinds of relationships, right? Including personal relationships with my wife, with my friends, so this sort of has backfired on me. You know, it's like I don't want to confront, so I just sort of try to evade the whole problem, right? And so it leaves many people just feel like when there needs to be an exchange with me, I've already disappeared. Right? Now, this is nothing unusual. I didn't choose to become a kind of an evasive person, right? It's just, I did, out of ignorance, I took my best option, right? Now, you know, other people could have made different choices. If I had a different body type, for example, I could have, you know, built myself up with the weights, and I could have been one of the guys who was a formidable fighter. You know, and I could have taken, like, you know, martial arts, and I could have, you know, really pounded some people who gave me that, you know? And in my dreams, you know, I really did, too. You know? But in reality, that's not the course, you know, but it would have made sense, right? You know, it's like you either pound or you're pounded. Right, you're either a hammer or a nail, as they say. You know? In Baltimore, you're either a hammer or a nail. Yeah. So it made sense what I did, and it would have made sense for me to become a bully, because it's better to be a bully than to be bullied, isn't it? So a person could develop a kind of violent temperament, or you know, kind of like revengeful. You cross the line, Buster, and I'm going to take you apart. Right? My dad was like that. He grew up in Elizabeth, and he used to actually say it. You cross the line, Buster, and I'm going to take you apart. He even said it to me, and I was like 5 years old. I was like, but, you know, you pick up. This is karma, right? This is karma. So it's we pick these. It's not like we're sinful. It's that we're ignorant. We use the available options as we're moving through life, and then we box ourselves in, or we develop destructive, we make choices that aren't good choices in the absence of all the knowledge. If somebody could have said to the person who's becoming a bully, and if that person were capable, let's say age 10 of understanding, say, don't you see, you're going to lock yourself into a cycle of violence that might make you unhappy, isolated, you know, an alcoholic. You know. If the little 10-year-old can understand, well, then I won't do it. You know, but then what are your options if you're worried about getting beaten up on the way to school every day? You know? And so people, you know, this process goes on, and it creates the people we are. It creates the problems we have when we come to the cushion. And it's not productive to beat yourself up about it. It's not productive. And not only that, it's intellectually incorrect, because it's not as though you chose to do these things, right? Consciously, I'll become a self-destructive addict. You know, that sounds like a good option. Nobody does that. It never works like that. It's not a free moral choice in the presence of total knowledge. It's usually a desperate choice made under pressure in with imperfect information. Okay, and then we get locked into the consequences. And if you beat one person up and suddenly you're popular. And basically you're safe, and you know, you shook some kid down and you took his lunch money, and you know, that's nice, you know. You begin to reinforce those qualities, and they escalate. Or if you're like me, you know, you learn how to stay out of trouble, be funny. You know, tell jokes, keep them laughing till you can get out of there, right? You know, the class comedian, you know, survives, right? And the people don't want to beat up the comedian, you know, generally speaking. So, that's how it goes, right? But then it escalates, right? You can't have a serious relationship, friendship with somebody who's... I heard a person was talking about Bob Hope, a person who knew... Many of you may not even know who Bob Hope is, but he's a famous comedian of maybe 40 years ago. And a person who knew him said, you know, when he was a young man, he was a very, very kind of gentle, pleasant person, and then he disappeared behind a wall of jokes, and he never came out. And I thought that was so poignant. You see, He made life choices in the absence of information, became a prisoner of his choices. something must have been painful for him. And so he just kept doing what had always worked. You know, this gets me out of pain. And so throw out some more jokes. And very, very poignant. That's all of it. That happens to all of us, right? And then we come to Sashin and we encounter these terrible obstacles, or they seem like terrible obstacles to practice. And we might want to say, well, you know, what are we supposed to do? What are we supposed to do? And you know, this is the beauty of Gute's finger. The answer is always in the moment. Or another way to put it is, the answer is always just to come back to this moment. This is what the Buddha taught, fundamentally. Now, as Buddhism progressed, it took on many different beliefs and so on, practices. But initially, you know, the Buddha never talked about do we live after death? He never talked about heaven or hell. In fact, he absolutely refused to talk about questions of that kind. People would say, well, tell me, do we have a soul or not? He just, I refuse to talk about that. People would say, well, what happens, what happens after we die? Do we go to a better place or a worse place? Or the Buddha would say, I refuse to even, please, get real. And so, what he said was, those are metaphysical speculations. Let's start with this moment. Just come back to this moment. Now, most people think, I'm in the moment. Man, all the time. But not so. Not so. The whole teaching of the Buddha was, be in this moment now. And when you're in this moment now, if you stay there long enough, it has this powerful transformative effect. And this is so important. When we're watching the breath, when we're doing breath perception meditation, what we're really doing is learning how to just be in the moment. Just no matter, your mind wanders into fantasy, into scenarios of personal disaster. It wanders into depression. It wanders into anger. You just keep coming back to the moment. See, back to the moment, back to the moment. And little by little, all of that dissipates. And the moment is not, it's not really good or bad. It's not really right or wrong, and so on. Those are all just concepts we attach. But the moment is pure presence, pure presence. And when we can be with the moment in its pure presence, we feel better, we feel calmer, we feel happier. And being in the moment is deeply transformative, because we stop the cycle of repeated destructive responses. So basically, every time I dealt with people as I was growing up, I tended to repeat the same dramas that I had learned as a child on the streets of Baltimore. So, when I was 5 and a bully was going to rough me up, I would, find another way to go to school. If I knew Bobby Westbrook was waiting for me on, such and such a street, I'd take another street and I'd actually go to another street. Or if I saw another kid who was a threat to me, I might, be obsequious, kiss his ass, right? Say, hey, that's a beautiful jacket, man. Where did you get that? To walk around him and get to school, So later you grow up and you do the same thing. You become, you use those skills and you keep encountering the same bully over and over again all your life, right? And so every person who's in your way, you deal with the same way you dealt with Bobby Westbrook, right? So this is like a cycle. You keep repeating the past. And so when we find ourselves, when we find ourselves in the presence of the moment, and this is breaking that cycle, you're in the moment, it's not frightening, it's not threatening. When you're in pure thusness, pure presence of the moment, it's not dangerous, it's not threatening, it's not menacing, it's not judging you, it's just pure presence. And actually, in that pure presence, we feel so calm and so happy. And this is breaking the cycle of karma. So this is really, I think, amazing. It's amazing. So, Zen practice is not like psychoanalysis. We don't go through our past and try to decide, to tell the story of our lives in some new way. It's just breaking the cycle of these automatic responses and staying in the moment long enough to change ourselves. And so, Gute's one finger, all Gute was trying to tell people is, be in the moment. Be in the moment. This is your delivery. This is your deliverance. This is your deliverance. Be in the moment. And it has this powerful psychological impact sooner or later, this powerful liberating impact. And it becomes a habit. It becomes, you leave Sesshin today. At the end of the day, you're going to leave and go back to your lives. And they're not less crazy than they were, right? But the thing is, we begin to cultivate a habit. When the world goes out of control and you feel boxed in on all sides, you can always go into your room and sit down on the cushion and be in the moment. And this is tremendously helpful. And yet suddenly you have a little perspective, right? You suddenly realize, I don't have to be mad. I don't have to be afraid. It may take you a while, depending on how painful the injury, may take you a while, or how dangerous the situation. But the moment holds the power to liberate you from really and truly anything that troubles you, anything that frightens you. And Zen practice is all about all about fully realizing the implications of the moment. If you stay in the moment long enough, it changes the way you experience everything in very profound ways. So we've all had this wonderful opportunity to be together in the moment. And I think many people have experienced deep transformations at this session, and in this process can go on forever. People often ask me at the end, as the session is coming to a close in Dokusan, for example, they'll say, how can I take this into my everyday life? And there, you can do that any way you like. When I was at beginning Zen practice, I didn't have much luck trying to be in the moment consciously as I was going about my work. For me, a long time in my practice, there was a split between my life on the cushion and my life off the cushion. So I wasn't very good at coming back from Sesshin and being in consciously in the moment. In fact, it was just too crazy. But I do think little by little I was changed by the times I spent on the cushion, because I was in the moment, at least a little bit on the cushion. and I began to break some of these karmic habits. And so, you know, the more time you spend on the cushion, the easier it is to free yourself. But please, if you take away nothing else from Sesshin, please take away with you this appreciation for the power of the moment. You know, you have this resource that you can use in the worst circumstances. And if you cultivate the capacity to be in the moment, you know, when you sit down, it's amazingly powerful. It will be amazingly powerful. It's in the sutras, this is talked about as what's called the wish-fulfilling gem. It's like a magical gem. You sit down, you enter the moment, all your fear, all your anger, all of those things drop away, you become clear and open, you feel connected, and time disappears. This is an amazing process. Engo's introduction. When even one particle stirs, the whole universe is involved. A blossom opens and the world responds. But what do you see when no particle stirs and no blossom does not open? It is said that it is like cutting the thread on a reel. One cut and you cut it all. Or it is like dying the thread on the reel, dying it once and you die it all. Now if you eradicate all the complications that affect you and bring out the treasure within you, you will find that everything is all right, above and below, before and behind. When do you do that? When you're in this moment. Everything is all right, above and below, before and behind. Always so. If you have not done this yet, if you don't know about the moment yet, please see the following. Main subject. Gute, whenever he was asked a question, only raised objection. This won't be in this moment now. Secho's verse. Well now, I like Gute's way of answering. Who could compare with him throughout the whole universe? He let down the wooden float into the dark sea, making the blind turtle sink and swim to cling to it. So, we have a few hours left in this precious sesshin, and your season, your weather can still change. So let's keep sitting with this beautiful, wholehearted practice and see what happens in the next moment.